Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Honora Wall welcoming you to the What in the World is Dyscalculia podcast. I'm making an audio version and a video version of today's podcast. So if you're watching this on YouTube or one of the social media outlets, probably at some point we'll post it to the website. You can see the video portion with it. If you're listening to this on a podcast, then you're just going to get the audio. And we'll try to do both every once in a while with these podcasts as time and recording options permit. But the What in the World is Dyscalculia podcast is brought to you by EduCalc Learning. And at educalclearning.com, you can find all sorts of teacher training, workshops, either in person or online, and our graduate course credits. You can earn 3 graduate credits taking teaching students with dyscalculia or teaching differentiated math. Those credits are given through Colorado State University Pueblo, who we partner with. And keep an eye out. We've got a lot more graduate level classes in the works that are in development right now. Super excited about those, but I'll bring you more information about that at a future time. Because what I want to talk to you about today is a clash of the titans. Instructional design versus cognitive load. So here's where this came about. I work with students across the country. I see a wide variety of math curriculums and programs, which is part of why I developed my own, which you can find at educalclearning.com or the dtri.org if you're using the It's Just Math program in your school. And I did them because I saw how my students with dyscalculia, dyslexia, dysgraphia, ADHD, etc., were really struggling to make themselves fit into, I will say, a traditional or standard online math class. And one of the big places where students have a real issue is when classes have those longer projects. So that's what I'm talking about today. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a long project, and there's nothing wrong with project-based learning. There's a ton of research behind both of those, and they can be really engaging and exciting for kids and get them really plugged into the content you're talking about in the right circumstances. Now, I am also not going to talk badly about the best practices around instructional design. There are some great things happening in the world of instructional design, both for K-16 students, and it's used a lot for onboarding or ongoing training in the corporate world. And there's some really exciting software out there that can make the training or the course come alive. And that's what these longer projects are really designed to do. However, just because something is great doesn't mean it's great all the time for every student. And as you know, if you've listened to the podcast or seen any of the reels I put up, when you're working with students who have dyscalculia, it just needs to be different. It's really like the difference between nutrition and exercise advice for a type 2 diabetic versus a type 1 diabetic. They're just different. So you want to take a really specific approach for the type 1 diabetic because it's really crucial that you get it right. And you want to take the absolute correct approach for a student with dyscalculia because otherwise it's not going to work. And here's why I want to break it down for you. I'll use a recent example with an unnamed student using an unnamed online math program that we've been helping her out with and working through with her. And I'm not naming the program because many of them come from the same kind of skeleton, the same original program anyway, or there's a lot of replication. You just see the same thing in a lot of different programs. So you get one or two spots throughout a semester where you have a longer project. In this case, the project is online in the course with some beautiful instructional designs, some really great little videos, some interactive pieces. Those are super fun to make and super fun to play around with, where different kinds of information can pop up. And it goes along with a PDF with the questions. A lot of scaffolding, a lot of breaking things down into smaller parts, tons of research behind that being a best practice for teaching. So, why is any of this a problem? Here's why. The student logs in, opens up the project. There's a ton of buttons, there's a lot of things to click. It's not really clear which thing you're supposed to click, so you do a lot of hovering and trying to click to see what kind of things are going to open up. Is there a video component? Is there an audio component? Are there little dots or stars and you hover and it gives information, or you click sometimes and it gives information? They're all different. And sometimes you get different elements within one project. Okay, that's one type of cognitive load. And if you're not familiar with cognitive load theory, please go read up about it. I will definitely do more episodes where we take a deep dive into the three types of cognitive load, how they interact, and how that changes the student experience. But all you need to know for today is that cognitive load is how much our brain can handle at one time. The really short, abbreviated version of cognitive load theory, which is a fantastic thing to read about and research. It's really interesting. It can really impact student performance when you get that cognitive load piece right. And what cognitive load theory tells us in a nutshell is that once we overwhelm the system, there's no learning going on. We're barely keeping up with what we're doing as far as finishing an activity. We're not comprehending, we're not moving to short or long-term memory, we're not retaining, we're losing a lot of the information. And that's a shame because we're losing the math. And we're losing what the instructional designer spent a lot of time putting into some nice graphics and interactive elements. So the student goes to the PDF, opens this up. Well, unless you have the kind of nice software that lets you type in a PDF, you're not going to be able to type in this document on your computer. It has to be a PDF because otherwise, a student could open something up and change it. So we have to maintain the integrity of the document. That makes perfect sense too. All right, so we can't type in it. Now, what is the student going to do? Maybe they can open it in Google Docs if they have that program, if it opens properly, and if it opens in a way that allows you to type in it. It should, but for this student, it did not. All right, so we cannot access it that way. What else can we do? Well, we could try opening it as a Word document. Ooh, wee. That messed up the formatting to the point where it was completely unreadable and completely unusable. Okay, now we're not going to do that. Let's see what else we can do. Maybe we can print it. Well, the laptop she does her math homework on was not connected to the home printer. All right. Could we send it to mom or dad? See if they can print it. Well, it wasn't really working. Not sure why. Mom and dad weren't in the session, so I have no idea what happened there, but it wouldn't print. Okay, so what else can we do? Well, she managed to find some printer that was hooked up to her phone. Now she had to save it, send it to the phone, find it on the phone, send it to the printer, print it out. Thank goodness the printer had ink and paper at that time. So this takes up an incredible amount of time during our session where we're supposed to be talking about math and the concept in this project. We haven't done any of that because we're still dealing with the technology piece and how we're going to get this project done. She could have written out the questions by hand. It was a four-page PDF document. She was not interested in writing all of that out by hand. I don't blame her. So we had to put this whole project to the side, pick it up at a different session so that we could actually talk about some math. So now we've extended the work. Now she's passed a deadline for the project. This really increases her anxiety. It was just very difficult. If you've worked with struggling students, You know the kind of frustration I'm describing. And we're not going to get a whole lot of learning done when we're in that heightened emotional state. Okay, we get through some math. We come back to this project at a later session. So now this is costing the family more money to hire me for a session and get through these topics. All right, but we have to get it done. So we get the PDF. She's got it printed. We're going through the questions. Now we have to go from the question back to the computer, open up the project again, find it. That took forever. Open it up again. Now we're opening up all of the different elements within the project. And the instructional designers did a beautiful job. It was lovely to look at and fun to interact with. What question did it answer? Where did we find? What are we looking for? What's important when we click these buttons? I don't know. We have to keep going back and forth. Every time we're shifting from the computer to the paper, we're losing a little bit of her focus and attention. Now we go to the paper to find out what we're looking for, go back and click all the interactive elements to try to find that again, write that thing down. Now, as we're going through the project, because it's broken down into little steps, which is a best practices for teaching to break things down into manageable chunks. It ended up being question, I'm going to make these numbers up, but question 23. Fill in this number from question 7 and this number from question 12, and then do this operation with it. And we're flipping back and forth. It was like completing your own tax form. Use line 33, which comes from Schedule C, which comes from line 18 after you filled out the table. Like, it was just an overwhelming amount of searching and finding and retrieving. Is this the right number? Who knows? Did she go to the right question? I don't know. We're working virtually. I can't really see what number she's grabbing. She's telling me I'm trying to remember what she said back when we were on question 7 discussing. And it just went on and on and on. By the time we got this project finished, I don't think she had really retained any of the math part of that lesson. We had a separate discussion after we had finished everything, and she had her work put aside so she could finish her summary later and get her work turned in. And we just discussed what the topic was about, what they were trying to get across, and calming her down because her frustration level was very high. So we have to mitigate the cognitive load of being overwhelmed with these multiple inputs of information, managing her emotional state, the cognitive load of what made sense to her previously about this project and what we had to create to make sense and how we had to talk about that. It was just a lot. It also took two or three different sessions before we really got through discussing everything. So, did she learn? I'm not even sure. Did she engage further with the real world scenario? I don't think so. Did she take anything away from it that later she can think, oh, that reminds me of the time I. No. So we had some beautiful instructional design that completely clashed with what we know about cognitive load theory, especially for a student with a learning disability. Especially for the math learning disability, dyscalculia, and it came together into a perfect storm. So, why am I bringing this up to you? Because if you're working with students, or if you are a student who has dyscalculia, I want you to understand that the frustration and the aggravation and doing all of this work, investing all of this time and energy, and not getting a mathematical return out of it is not about you. It's not really about the student. It's about these external factors, which is one of the parts of cognitive load. This situation involved all three parts of cognitive load, but it was really difficult. And a lot of programs have something like this that's overwhelmingly difficult for a lot of students. This student was very lucky because we already had a relationship where we've worked together, we've talked about math before. She knew we were going to reflect on it. We were going to discuss it and pull it apart and make that part make sense. A lot of students don't have that, especially when they're doing online work. If you're overseeing a student working in a program like that, make sure you dive in to those projects. Help them figure out how to open the PDF or however they're making their assessment. Help them print it. Help them get their materials together. Help them navigate the computer and where to find things hidden within this beautiful instructional design, because it's not very clear. Once we take some of that frustration off the table, then they have a much better chance of engaging with the real world scenario, the story being told within this project. Don't assume that a student, especially one who struggles, is going to make those connections on their own and is going to engage that way on their own. I mean, it's really what Vygotsky told us how long ago? You got to have a more knowledgeable other. I think Vygotsky's work on the more knowledgeable other is much more important than his work on the zone of proximal development. That's my theory. We have to have someone else we can discuss these topics with and we can work out a problem with. A lot of math is about problem solving, but unfortunately, for students doing this work on their own, the problem solving is just getting through this really frustrating experience. That's a big part of why some of our students are just putting it into ChatGPT, typing in the first half of the first sentence, and boom, here comes Brainly and Chegg and quite a few other online programs that already have the program or the project in there, and they're just grabbing what they can, or they're doing minimal effort on their own because they're not really sure what's going on or what you're asking of them. And they're not getting the grade they want. Now we don't have mastery. We don't have comprehension. We don't have engagement. And we don't have a passing grade. So we have a perfect storm for this struggling student. If possible, I would recommend using a program like mine or others are now starting to move away from those discussion-based assessments and the long projects and things like that in an online course, because we know students aren't really engaging the way we want them to or the way we need them to. So find a program that doesn't have that element if you have a student with dyscalculia. Add in engaging projects and discussions on top of the online program they're doing. If you're using the It's Just Math program, we tell you how to do that. We want you to use that as a framework, as a basis, and then get the more knowledgeable other down there with the student, engaging, enriching, expanding. If you are overseeing, and I know a lot of teachers are overseeing online instruction or students in online classes in a media center or a library, and you might have 30 students in there logged into computers and they're all taking different classes at the same time. And you're probably the librarian or the media center director or sometimes a para. So you're not going to have the kind of content knowledge in all of these different grade levels and all of these different areas. That's incredibly difficult. When you can, try to sit down and have conversations with students while they're working on those longer projects. Help them out. It's going to give them some support, help them engage. Help them stay on top of their pacing to get these things done by the end of a school year or for grade recovery. There's lots of different reasons why there are dates attached to this work. So, long story short, I just want you to be really aware of this. You can have a beautifully constructed project online in a math course. And shout out to the instructional designers who are making things very engaging. And truly, they're hard to code and they're hard to come up with. And you make a storyboard and a script. It's very involved, hard work. And shout out to the students who are pushing through even when these situations are very frustrating and overwhelming. What I'd really like to see is more tutors, interventionists, teachers, parents. More knowledgeable others, wherever we're finding them, getting down in the trenches and helping students. You need to understand that part of the problem is not just the math, it's everything else going on in getting this math project completed. When we sit down with students and have a discussion and look at what they're going through, we find that there's a lot more involved than, boy, does this student know math or not? No, there's a lot more to discuss. So, Clash of the Titans, instructional design versus cognitive load. Sometimes it's hard to find a winner, but we can definitely find the loser in the battle, and it's usually the student. So, get in there with your students and help them out. If you'd like to know more about cognitive load theory, if you'd like to know a little more about instructional design, that one you can research. I don't have a lot of that on the websites. There's some really important best practices to follow in instructional design. If you'd like to know more about dyscalculia, check out either of the websites, educalclearning.com or the dtri.org. If you have questions or comments for me or a topic you'd like to hear about in a future episode, please send me an email, Honora, Honora, at educalclearning.com or Honora at the dtri.org. You can find me on all sorts of social media as well, and at some conferences all over the country. And other than that, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for listening to What in the World is Dyscalculia? I hope that you got some good information that will help you and your students, and we will chat again soon.